I'm Dr. Jen Berman here on KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. I'm a licensed psychotherapist, and I'm here with you sharing your Valentine's Day until 10 o'clock tonight. I'm now in studio with my fantastic guest, Robin Sachs, who's going to be taking calls with us tonight about how to keep our loved ones and ourselves safe. Robin is a former Los Angeles deputy district attorney who specialized in prosecuting crimes against children. She's a legal analyst and a guest commentator. You may have seen her on shows like CNN, Larry King Live, Nancy Grace, The Today Show, or many, many others. She is the author of four books, It Happens Every Day, Inside the Life of a Sex Crimes DA, The Complete Idiot's Guide to the Criminal Justice System, Women's Legal Lives, Predators and Child Molesters, a Sex Crimes DA Answers 100 of the Most Asked Questions. Her accomplishments are so long and so vast, I could spend the next hour just talking about her. But instead, I will save some time so that we can actually ask her questions, because I know I have a very long list myself. But you can check out her website at robinsachs.com. That's spelled R-O-B-I-N-S-A-X.com. And she also has her very well-known newsletter called Sachs Facts. And I have to tell you, this newsletter is contagious. Everyone I know is part of this newsletter. It's a fantastic, fantastic newsletter. So, Robin, thank you so much for being on the show. And I have a lot of questions for you. If you listeners have questions, give us a call at 800-520-1KFI. We're going to start out by talking about kids and technology. You know, Facebook, cell phones, emails, the internet. Most parents are baffled about what to do. I recently gave a parenting lecture at a Young Presidents organization, and at the end of the lecture, so many of the questions were parents saying, should my kids be on Facebook? What should I do about the internet? So I want to turn it over to you, Robin. Talk to us about Facebook. Let's start with Facebook, because this is just one of the biggest issues that parents are dealing with.
Well, first of all, when you look at Facebook, what people need to recognize is Facebook is the second largest country in the world. So it's
so many members.
So there are so many members, with membership growing. Probably by the time we get off of this radio show tonight, it'll be the number one country. I mean, it's an astronomical growth online every day by hundreds of thousands of new members and new people. And that's not just Facebook, but there are tons and tons of other social networking sites, as you know. But the key is that you have this huge population of people all gathered in one place, yet there is virtually no law enforcement. So it is a country with no rules, no laws, and people running amok. Not to say that there's not some wonderful advantages of social networking and Facebook and online behavior, but the idea that we are looking from the outside in this uncontrolled land is very scary for parents.
And I know as a parent myself, and my children are very young, that I look to the day when my kid comes to me and says, I want a Facebook account. And I understand that you have to be 13 to get one. But my question for you is it appropriate for a 13-year-old who's impulsive, who may not have a good idea of who is safe, who isn't, to actually have a Facebook account?
Well, let me just take you back one step first. A lot of us think, okay, well, I don't need to worry about this until my kids are 13 because they can't even get on Facebook anyway, and people hide behind that. But what people don't recognize is that any kid who has a Club Penguin account, a Webkinz account, or any other Disney type of account is basically socially networking right now. If your kid has a Club Penguin account, one penguin talking to another penguin are two people social networking online. And even though the penguins right now have pre-programmed conversations where they can't use their own autonomy and their own vocabulary to carry on a conversation, they do have a choice of 10 or 11 different words that they can say to a penguin that walks up to them. And by allowing them to do that at age 3, 4, 5, and 6, we are teaching them how to social network, and it's very hard to reel back once the age comes to Facebook, because how can you say no when you said yes to Webkinz, Club Penguin, and the sort? So we have to start
Absolutely.
Really early.
I know the Alliance for Childhood recommends that children not even be on the computer until age 6 or 7.
That's right.
So what do you recommend in terms of social networking? When do you think the kids should be allowed to even start to open those doors?
Well, the first thing, the reality is, and it's the same reality with Club Penguin, is the same reality with Facebook. We can have the rules that we have in our homes and decide that that's the law of the land. But the reality is that if we don't set up the precautions in advance and start having these conversations with our children, they will be exposed to them at different, if they're friends' houses. So even if a child's family rules are you may not have a Club Penguin account, that doesn't mean that their eyes are not going to land on a Club Penguin page in somebody else's home. So the first reality is we need to accept, regardless of what we think our personal rules are and what the rules we hope our friends and families are going to have, that those are going to actually be the rules that everybody has. And what that means is that we need to start getting tech savvy as parents and not be tech paranoid.
So how do we do that? What should we do?
So the first thing, the very most important thing is every single parent should get themselves on Club Penguin. Get on Webkinz. Get a Facebook account. Get a MySpace account. Get on YouTube. Everybody should know how to navigate these sites. It's very, very easy to say, I'm worried about that site out there and have all kinds of ideas of what the sites are. But you really can't even know what your kids are talking about unless you're on them yourselves and know what they're talking about and can have that visual in their mind. Just like you wouldn't go and buy a crib for a young your child without touching it, looking at it, feeling it, examining it, reading reviews on it. You must go and touch and look and read and do all that same research from very young to for every website. So that's the first step.
Oh, sorry, go on. Yeah.
so then begin to determine what there is to worry about. Understand how Facebook works. One thing that people don't realize is how unbelievably informative some of these social networking sites can be. There's all this negative concern and there's all of this, oh my God, what's going to happen to them on there? But parents don't recognize that this is an opportunity to connect with their kids in a way that they ever have. This doesn't mean that parents need to navigate these sites on their own. Your kids know more about the internet than you do. Sit down with your child and say, honey, come sit down with me. Show me how to create a profile. Show me how to create a person. What picture is appropriate, for example?
That's a great suggestion.
So, for example, I had, I have two stepsons, as you may know. And when my youngest stepson was 14 and he wanted to get a Facebook account, I said, hey, help me set up my Facebook account. And I started trying to figure out which picture I wanted to upload. And I pointed to a picture of me in my nice bikini from Cabo. And I said, what do you think about this picture? And he looked at me mortified and said, what are you thinking about putting that picture on? I'm like, great answer. I would never put that picture on. But we were able to engage in a conversation about what types of pictures are appropriate by taking the pressure off of him and his choices and looking at the choices that I was making.
So once your child is on Facebook, you've sat down, you've had this discussion, you're on Facebook, your kid is on Facebook, then do you try to friend your child? Is the rule of the house that you recommend, you can't be on Facebook unless you friended me?
Absolutely. Parents and kids should have an agreement in advance, and that's one very easy thing to do right at the beginning of getting a Facebook account, is that your child must friend you. And not only should you friend your child, but you should have an agreement amongst your circle of adult friends, the parents of your kids, that everyone is going to friend everybody's kids. Because what that does is that puts back the whole neighborhood watch. It puts back the village in the village. I'm going to watch your kid. You're going to watch my kid. My mom's on Facebook. My 63-year-old mother is on Facebook and calls me and says, oh my God, Jason's in college playing naked Twister. I'm like, what? And it was a joke, but it was a completely inappropriate joke. But within 3 minutes, my mother knew I was getting phone calls. I was able to call my husband, and we were on it much faster than you ever would be.
That's a great way to keep an eye on your kids, and it sounds like a really effective one, and also a great way to engage other parents, because a lot of the time, other parents aren't as involved in their kids' lives as you are, but sometimes one parent can really start a trend by saying, I'm going to friend my kid on Facebook, and now I want for you too. Hold that thought, Robin. I'm Dr. Jen Berman, licensed psychotherapist. I'm here with Robin Sachs, and she is a legal analyst and safety expert. And this is KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio.
You don't just want to know, you need to know.
KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio.
Hi there, I'm Dr. Jen Berman, licensed psychotherapist, and I'm here with you until the 10 o'clock hour here on KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk. I'm here in studio with Robin Sachs, a former DA and a safety expert. We were just talking about kids and Facebook and the internet, and Robin made a great suggestion about that parents who are letting their kids go on Facebook should all friend their kids on Facebook and encourage other parents to do it. But so, Robin, so what do parents do if they see something inappropriate or if they see their child get an instant message that makes them uncomfortable?
Every person is going to receive some sort of unwanted message online in some form or fashion, probably sitting in your email spam box, and in mine are about 100, you know, Viagra ads and a bunch of prescription medicine ads and so forth. So we know that people are out there who are going to send something inappropriate to our children. What we want our kids to recognize is an inappropriate message, and to recognize that there is only one response, and that response is to delete. Many times kids think that they can outsmart the person who is sending this message and say, oh, I'm just going to mess with them and say something back to them funny or whatever. Well, the second a kid does that, or anybody does that for that matter, they're engaging in a conversation. Sure. So what a kid should do is they should be told that they should delete the message, but that they should come to the parent first. And the parent's response should be, I'm so proud of you for coming to me. Use it as an opportunity to have a teachable moment and discuss the inappropriate message and discuss how it felt to get that message. And for sure, do not put yourself in the situation where you are saying to your child, now you're forbidden to go online because of some perpetrator's disgusting message. Instead, we should be honoring our child and saying, thank you for coming to me. I'm so proud of you for coming for me. You did exactly the right thing. And let's hit delete and go on and do your thing.
And I'm assuming that you don't do that because you want to make sure that you are a source of information for your kids and your kids feel comfortable coming to you and they're not worried that you're going to start punishing them because of something that someone else did or sent to them.
That's exactly right. So often when we see those situations come up, we get uncomfortable and we think that the only way to handle it and deal with it is just to prevent the mechanism.
And parents panic.
Of course.
We get scared. We think some predators just come after my child. The best thing I can do is just take them offline. And then suddenly you have this tension between you and your kid and you don't know what to do.
That's exactly right. And it's those situations that then actually could cause the child to feel the need to connect with people that understand them and get them even more. If a kid cannot connect to their parent, they will try to find someone that they can connect with. And the best, most skilled connectors out there are the perpetrators.
And can you talk a little bit about grooming and about predators and grooming?
And that's really an important point that you bring up, is that predators online use the exact same techniques that people in the real world use. A lot of us get really worried about online behavior because it's that, you know, big bad world out there. And we should, you know, remember that 86% at the low end, 92% at the high end of sexual abuse occurs between someone whom the victim knows. So sure, these stranger type of cases where we spend a lot of our time worrying about is just not the reality of what the cases may be. But what people
So it's far more likely to be the neighbor, the friend, the babysitter, someone who you actually know and is in your child's life.
That's right. Or a family member, frankly. And those people also utilize the internet as a way of grooming, which is the word that you just brought up. And grooming is the behavior where a perpetrator spends time, and that's the key element, is the completely undistracted, devoted attention to the child. Online in real life, they spend time learning what their interests are, learning what their hobbies are, knowing what movies are in, knowing who their friends are, knowing what's cool. That's what kids want, is they spend time studying this child in order to gain access. They know everything. And that's what it really is.
And I imagine that in this day and age, when parents are so busy and where kind of work life has bled into private life, where parents are taking calls from their bosses at the dinner table, where the TV is on, we have our laptops in bed, like I talked about in the first hour, where it shouldn't be, that kids are probably, a lot of kids that I see in my practice are hungry for attention. They're hungry for a family dinner where they do have their parents' focus and attention. And from what you're saying, the kids that don't get that are even more vulnerable to predators grooming them and coming after them.
That's right. And that's exactly what predators do, is that they find those openings where kids are not getting their fill of undivided attention, and they provide that undivided attention. They're always available. They always listen. They're not connected to their Blackberries or their laptops or whatever.
And make the kid feel special.
Exactly. And then what they do is, but what parents need to recognize is it's not just the kid that gets groomed. Very often in real life situations, this is away from the online situation, is that the predator will spend time grooming the parent as well.
How so?
Spending time trying to get to know the needs. Oh, you must, you know, you seem so stressed out. Let me help you out right now. Oh, you've got a lot of projects going on. Let me see if I can be there for you in a pinch. always that person who's just so eager to help out. Anybody, I always say, anybody who wants to spend time with your kids, it should be a red flag. I mean, how many kids do you want to hang out at your house just for fun?
Sure. No, can't name many. Yeah.
So, I mean, unless you're a teacher and you're getting paid and that's what your job is.
It's a play date with your kid.
That's right. But that, again, is
about your kid.
It's for your kid. You're not doing it for your own benefit. If someone says, it's just my life to want to spend time with other people's children, I'm not saying every person who says that is bad, but it's something that should be a red flag.
Most definitely. Now, what about cell phones?
Cell phones are our most ever-changing source of technology now. And now, cell phones aren't just cell phones as a communication device. And let me pick up the phone. Cell phones are mini computers. So
they have email. They have pictures. They have texting. It's a whole other thing now.
It is. It's many, many gadgets in one. And the mobility, meaning that you can access it and use it anywhere, anytime, makes it that much more of a concern for parents. So parents should not have phones that have internet access on the phone.
How old should a child be the first time they get a cell phone with no internet access?
You know, there's different rules and different circumstances for different families. I don't want to give an exact age because there are circumstances where there could be in a divorced family situation where a cell phone going for that particular weekend to the other parent's house in the backpack may be a necessity. So it's something that needs to be thought out. It's not shouldn't be something that you buy like a stuffed animal or a book or as any other toy.
Or like, when you're X number of years old, you get a cell phone.
Right. And you shouldn't do that either because, frankly, a 13-year-old who has no reason, no place to go, no need to have access to communication doesn't need a phone necessarily either.
And most of the parents I see say, well, I got it for my child in case there's an emergency, in case they got stuck and needed a ride or they really needed to talk to me because they were at a friend's house and felt uncomfortable. But hold that thought, Robin. I'm Dr. Jen Berman. This is KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. And now here's Michael Kroger with the news.
Making truth serum, word by word.
KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Talk radio. Talk radio.
I'm Dr. Jen Berman, licensed psychotherapist, and I'm here with you until the 10 o'clock hour. I'm here with Robin Sachs, and we're here on KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk. Robin is a former DA and a safety expert, and we've been talking about kids and technology and how to keep our kids safe. We were just talking about cell phones, and Robin, you were about to make some recommendations about kids and cell phones. You had said that you recommend no internet, but what about cameras and things like that, text messaging?
Well, the concern we have now with text messaging, and as we know that with teenagers, is that teenagers, and all kids, frankly, for that matter, but particularly teenagers, are at their height of risk-taking behavior and at their lowest level of common sense. And then they have a device in their hand that they can send any uncensored message to anybody.
Even their parents.
About anybody, about anything. And have that be transmitted, and that message could then be sent out to hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people. And what kids don't realize is that they think that when they're sending a message or a picture or whatever, that it's something that is between them, it's an expression between them and their friend. But what very often, as we know, happens is messages get passed around. And when you add the internet airwaves to it, all of a sudden that becomes the purview for governmental involvement.
Absolutely. I mean, I've seen all too many kids who have sent nude pictures of themselves. And I think right now MTV is running a whole campaign. And I think that they say something like 80% of sexting or pictures, naked pictures, get shared with more than one person. And most kids don't realize that they send a naked picture of themselves to their boyfriend who they trust. But then the boyfriend shows the friend and he forwards it to one person. And oops, the whole school has it. And suddenly it's posted on the internet.
That's right. And people are doing things with their cell phones. And this is not just kids. This is adults who are doing this too, that they would never do in real life.
That's a great point.
And so if you are not going to do something, whether it be send a message, take
or show
off
your
shirt.
Boobs.
Or, right, exactly. Or take off your shirt or show pictures of your genitalia or talk about your sex life or whatever. If you weren't going to do it in real life, you definitely shouldn't do it on a cell phone either.
What do we do about our impulsive kids who would like to take a picture of their boobs and send it to their boyfriend. How do we talk to them about this in a way that we don't alienate them and we don't just wag our fingers at them and say, don't do this, that really helps them connect with the message and understand the consequences of it?
Well, and that's the key. The key is that for kids to recognize that there are consequences and ramifications for their actions, not only for themselves, but for their parents as well. If a kid sends a text message or a sexually explicit message through the through a cell phone to another person, and that picture ends up in the wrong hands, that person could be dealing with a charge for the dissemination of child pornography, which is a registered sex offense, not what we want. Our sex,
I never even thought of that part of it.
Not an aspect that we want our that is not the group of people that law enforcement necessarily are looking to crack down on.
So like your 16-year-old daughter sends a naked picture of herself to her 16-year-old boyfriend. He then forwards it to his 18-year-old brother, and now suddenly if the police get involved, he could be considered to be a pedophile.
Not just the 18-year-old, but both of those 16-year-olds as well. The first 16-year-old girl who took the picture of her own body could be technically charged with the dissemination of child porn, even if it's her own picture. Even though the law was not set up to prosecute those types of cases, the wrong cop, the wrong DA, the wrong judge on the wrong day could...
Looking to make an example of these kids.
Exactly. And the example being that we want to show kids that their behaviors have ramifications. So what's the best thing to do is to recognize that there is cause and effect for every single thing that we do out there. And to talk these scenarios through. You were talking about in an earlier hour about narrating. You were talking about that in terms of narrating with 2-month-year-olds or 1-month-year-old babies in terms of everyday life. Well, we need to narrate as adults what we're doing as we're doing it throughout the whole duration of their life. If we, as we do things, oh, I'm sending an email, and say what you're doing out loud as you're doing it. Oh, I'm sending an email to someone at work. Oh, I'm sending this email to dad. Not only are you connecting with them and not tuning out so that they know what you are doing while you're doing it and recognize that maybe some of the technology use is actually beneficial, but also recognize, okay, these are good purposes by which we use technology. These are beneficial, helpful aspects of technology.
And I guess also one of the points that you bring up that I never even thought about is that we're role models to our kids in all these different areas in their life where they see us, whether it be driving or our relationship with our spouse or how we talk to people in the supermarket, but they don't know what happens on the internet. They don't know how we handle ourselves in email or online or anything like that because they don't get to witness it. So they don't have good role models unless we do exactly what you're saying and we narrate.
That's right. And we as adults, it starts with us. We live in a time of tremendous double standard. We worry about our privacy and dissemination of our information. We're worried about identity theft. We're worried about whether our credit's going to be stolen. We're worried about all the stuff. Yet adults have no problem going and taking a picture of themselves, a naked picture, and sending it to their husband or their boyfriend. As a matter of fact, I read an article on AARP that was posted about a month ago saying that the elderly should engage in sexting because it could spice up their sex life and that it would be good for old people to start doing what kids are doing. And I was thinking, oh my goodness, this is this article. They have no precautions. What happens if there's an old grandpa at a nursing home who sends a sext and it goes inappropriately to another grandma who may be losing her noodles? Who knows? It could be dangerous for them too.
And embarrassing.
Exactly.
And very embarrassing.
So if you're not going to say it in real life, we shouldn't be saying it. Definitely on a cell phone, telephone, internet, we need to just recognize that there are ramifications for our behavior.
I read an article recently that talked about people getting robbed because of things that they posted on Facebook or tweeted about and saying things like, oh, I'm off on my Mexican vacation and then I'll be back in a week, and then someone goes in and robs their house. And then we had that burglar bunch that were robbing celebrities based on their tweets, that so they knew when they were home and when they weren't. And I think it's a very important thing for listeners to be aware of. I know it's something I personally had never thought about.
That's right. That was the famous Bling Ring case here in Los Angeles. And it is. I mean, lest you think that no one's watching your status online, if you're going through a divorce, I've heard of cases where the first thing opposing counsel is going to do is look at your Facebook status, and you can't claim no money and then say that you're shopping at Hermes on Rodeo. It doesn't work.
Exactly. And I read recently about something where a man was saying that he was sober and going through a divorce, and then he had posted pictures of himself clearly drunk holding alcohol on his Facebook page.
Yeah. Bad move. I mean, great move for the other attorney, but bad move for the guy.
Always thinking like a lawyer.
That's right.
Now, what about these conversations that we need to start to have with our kids? When do we start talking to our kids about these predators out there, and how do we start to open up that conversation with really young kids?
As soon as kids are able to talk or articulate in any way, and assuming you're doing the narrating as you're doing it, you should be having narrative type of conversations all the time, particularly the conversations that you have when you're outside. I always think that when you start with the outside world, talking about predators and safety is a lot easier. It doesn't feel as scary. It doesn't feel as scary to us as parents. So, for example, as we're walking around a city and you see or you encounter in a situation that makes you feel uncomfortable, instead of grabbing your kid hand and, you know, swifting them away and taking them to the other side of the street and caring about your business, say, you know what, I'm taking your hand on this side of the street because I'm feeling a little bit uncomfortable. That person over there made me feel uncomfortable. And a lot of times we get concerned that we're going to look like we're being racist or gender biased or appear like we're being judgmental. But the fact of the matter is we must be judgmental. We make choices and decisions every day. I can't tell you how many times I've heard people say, you know, I got into this elevator even though I felt a little bit uncomfortable because I didn't want the person in the elevator to think I was rude. Okay, why are we worried about what strange person in an elevator is going to think about our manners? Why isn't the default mode, I'm going to protect myself?
And I want to talk to you more about teaching kids to listen to their gut instincts. So hold that thought. I'm Dr. Jen Berman, and this is KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio.
Wait, are we back already? Really? Fewer commercials. Nice.
KFI.
I'm Dr. Jen Berman, licensed psychotherapist, and I'm here with you until the 10 o'clock hour. We've only got a few more minutes left here on KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. And I'm here with my guest, Robin Sachs, who is a former DA and a safety expert. And we were just talking about teaching kids to listen to their gut instinct. And I remember when I was training with the Los Angeles Commission on Assaults Against Women as a rape and battering hotline counselor, one of the things that they talked a lot about was in date rape situations, how it can be really difficult when a woman feels uncomfortable or when a woman is having a boundary violated to speak up, because like you were talking about, we don't want to be a B-I-T, you know what, and everyone is women tend to be trained to be nice. And it starts from a very young age. And a lot of the time I'll see a parent who brings their child to meet a family member and they say at the end, oh, kiss Uncle Joey. And that child doesn't know Uncle Joey. And that child says, I don't want to kiss Uncle Joey. And the parent will say, oh, no, you have to be polite, kiss Uncle Joey. And that what a lot of parents don't realize is that in that moment, they teach that child not to listen to their gut instinct and to not respect their own boundary. And maybe you can talk a little bit further about kids and teaching them to listen to that gut. And how soon does that start? And what's the best way for parents to convey that message to their children?
Well, you were spot on, Jen, in terms of recognizing that we as adults do things that are inconsistent with our own gut instincts. And that's where we first need to start, is in how we handle ourselves. There are many people that we as adults may give a hug to, shake a hand to, are kind to, and where we actually feel uncomfortable with that person. I've been in situations where I've met someone and I felt like that person made me feel a little bit uncomfortable, and that person reached over to give me a hug, and then I caught myself giving that person a hug back. Or as we see pregnant women, where people come up to a pregnant woman and they start touching
their belly.
They start doing that, and you don't, and people don't, and they do that, and there's a young toddler sometimes standing right there, and we're letting someone touch our own body, yet we're telling our kids, don't let anyone touch your body. So our messages are very inconsistent. And what we must start with is our own personal messaging, that what we do on our own as adults starting first, making sure that we stick up for ourselves and stand up for ourselves and listen to our own inner uh-oh voices and actually acting on those and saying things like, you know what, I'm pregnant. I know it may seem like a little bit weird, but I'm really not one of those people that likes my body touch, so I'm going to just ask you not to do it.
And modeling that in front of our child to show them how it's done.
That's exactly right. And if there's someone who gives you a kiss or a hug that you don't feel comfortable with, to get comfortable and learn how to say, you know what, I'm just not a hugging, kissing kind of person. Really nice to meet you. Look forward to seeing you again. We can be polite, and we can be polite by putting those boundaries. It's actually the same kind of feeling if we as adults got more comfortable saying to people, who's at your home tonight before you send your kid on a play date? Instead of feeling guilty for asking that question and just started doing it and saying, I'm not trying to ask you to be weird. I'm not trying to ask you to be a nosy, or I don't trust you. I just want to make sure I'm doing everything to ensure my kid's safety and my peace of mind. And I think that responsible people will appreciate that.
Sure. I know I would be far more likely to send my kid over to another child's house for a play date if that parent called me up and said, do you have any guns in the house? How do you store your medication? Who else is coming at your house while my child is there? It wouldn't offend me in the least bit. I would go, that's a kind of parent I might actually trust.
Right, exactly. I mean, think about it in the moment where you're at a shopping store, at any sort of store, and they ask you for your driver's license, and they actually spend the time to look at your picture and compare the picture with the name or whatever. You don't sit there and say, how dare you look at my picture? You're like, oh, that's kind of nice.
Good.
You
know, that always makes me happy. They do that at Sprinkles Cupcakes.
Yes.
I always go, oh, good.
Yeah, they do. And all the time, as a matter of fact, I was at Sprinkles Cupcakes, and they did it to Seal. And I thought that was a fabulous moment, is that and I was like, you're carding Seal here? I mean, he's probably one of the most distinguished looking type of people, very easily recognizable person. But anyway, I think that we appreciate when people go through the extra effort for safety precautions. And if we get comfortable doing that, we will start showing our kids that taking care of our own bodies is numero uno. And then when they have those uh-oh moments, if we sit there and honor them and listen to them, they will be more inclined to start the conversation with us, which is really what we want them to do. That person makes me feel uncomfortable. Well, let's talk about why that person makes you feel uncomfortable, and talk to your child. Why is it that that person makes you feel uncomfortable? What gives you the uh-oh feeling, and be able to have those conversations?
Instead of shaming the child and saying, oh, you shouldn't feel that way, which is probably one of my least favorite things that a parent can say to their child, because I think that then the child is still left with the uncomfortable feeling, and now they feel ashamed of it, and they've kind of looked to their parent to help make sense of that feeling, and then the child is just kind of left shamed and uncomfortable. But I do think that this issue is so, so crucial. I think Gavin DeBecker, in his book, The Gift of Fear, gives a great example that I'm sure you've heard of, where he talks about this woman who, as you mentioned, she was going home, and she had one of those, she's carrying her groceries, and she comes home, and she has one of those apartment buildings where you have to buzz in, and she walks in, and someone walks in behind her, and she feels uncomfortable because she doesn't know who the person is, and she just has that gut uh-oh feeling, but she doesn't want to be mean. She doesn't want to be perceived as having bad manners, and she gets into the elevator, and he gets in with her, and she still feels uncomfortable. She doesn't want to get out because she doesn't want to look like she's rude. And then he says, oh, let me take your groceries, and he picks up her groceries, and she says, oh, no, I don't need you to do that. And he says, oh, please, I want to help you, and takes him to the door, and ultimately she opens the door. He puts him on the kitchen table, which made her uncomfortable, and ultimately he ended up raping and harming her. And in retrospect, DeBecker talks about all those moments where we, especially as women, where we don't want to be mean, where we don't want to be rude, where we don't listen to our instincts. But I think it's pretty universal. I think it's men and women alike who don't want to be perceived as being paranoid or crazy.
That's right. And more importantly, in terms of when, as we listen to our instincts, we don't need to go through this analysis in our head of why we have that instinctual feeling. A lot of people feel that they need to do an internal investigation to pinpoint whatever the it is that's causing the uncomfort. Who cares? The uh-oh feeling.
No need to justify it.
This is not an investigation. We're not convicting anyone. The person can be perfectly nice, but the default mode should be to protect ourselves, listen to your voice, and say, you know what? I'm going to honor my own feelings.
It's such a great point. And Robin, thank you so much for being here tonight. I really, really appreciate you sharing your Valentine's Day with me. And I think I owe both your husband and my husband a dinner after tonight.
Sprinkles cupcakes.
Exactly. Please check out Robin's latest books on Amazon, It Happens Every Day, Inside the Life of a Sex Crimes DA, The Complete Idiot's Guide to Criminal Justice System, Women's Legal Lives, and Predators and Child Molesters. Also, go to her site, robinsacks.com, and sign up for her Sacks Facts newsletter. Thank you so much for choosing to share your Valentine's Day here with me at KFI AM 640. I'm Dr. Jen Berman, and you can get my book, The A to Z Guide to Raising Happy, Confident Kids on Amazon, and my next book, Super Baby, 12 Ways to Give Your Child a Head Start in the First 3 Years, is now available for pre-order. For more information about me or to sign up for my newsletter or read my blog, you can go to drjen.com, spelled out drjen.com. That's drjen.com. And my newsletter is available as well. Again, thank you so much for tuning in. I'm Dr. Jen Berman. It's been a pleasure being your host tonight. This is KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. And now here's Michael Crozier with the news.